Welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am Lisa Zimmer, and I'm thrilled to bring you my special guest today. Dr. David Perlmutter is live, and we are going to be talking about the coronavirus vaccine today. He is in line to receive the vaccine, and without further ado, I would like to just introduce Dr. David Perlmutter. Thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking about the vaccine. Welcome, welcome.
I'm delighted to be here. I will say I'm not actually in line. I mean, I'm actually
okay.
At home. I'm not in the line, but, I'm being
not
age 66. Yeah.
Kind of in check.
Yep.
They're giving you a heads up. That's what they're giving you.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about the vaccine. There's two that are out, the Moderna and the Pfizer. And what we were talking about just earlier is they don't really know where who's getting what or who's getting what vaccine, but it's going
Let me hold that right there. I mean,
okay.
I think that everyone knows who's getting what. I mean, there's no mystery as to who's getting which vaccine. You know, one would think meticulous records are being kept, especially as it relates to the time course for the second or follow-up vaccine that has to be done pretty precisely if you want to gain the recorded benefits of these immunizations. So I would say that I would expect that pretty precise records are being kept.
Okay. So there is more than one injection that is taken.
Right.
How is the procedure? How does that go?
Well, you receive your immunization, and typically you are observed for a period of time, 15 minutes to a half an hour, to observe to make sure there's no untoward reaction, allergic reaction, et cetera. And thus far there have been two fairly significant allergic reactions that have occurred in the 2 million thus far immunizations, vaccines that have been given. So that's a reaction rate of 0.0001%, and no deaths have been reported. So, you know, based upon that, it seems like the reaction rate negatively in terms of allergic reaction is exceedingly low. We do know, however, that not an insignificant number of people get soreness in the arm, can feel fatigued for a day or so, and may even have a headache or slight fever, and those are not significantly uncommon. So that said, that would be what people might expect could happen to them should they receive the vaccine.
Now, I did read there was a physician who received the vaccine and had an allergic reaction because he's allergic to shellfish. Is that something that is common, or is that something that is easily passed through, or do you know anything about that?
Well, again, there have only been a couple of severe allergic reactions in the entire history of providing either the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine. Some people will have a mild allergic reaction if they have underlying allergies, whether it's a shellfish allergy, perhaps a nut allergy, egg allergy, milk allergy, or wheat allergy, whatever it may be, animal
okay.
allergy. They might be at increased risk, as they would be anyway, for allergic reactions. And these are the people who would tell that healthcare provider on the front end, you know, I'm allergic to aardvarks. Keep an eye on me for a little while.
Right.
And they should have at the ready an EpiPen should there be a problem.
Okay, great. And, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there. Let's just dispel the biggest and the kind of the most monstrous one I've heard. I heard this conspiracy theory that the vaccine alters the DNA of the individual who receives it. Now, can we talk a little bit about that? Is that a possibility even?
Lisa, anything in this world is possible, but the beauty of this vaccine is, let me just walk through what typically happens inside your cell. You have your life code, your DNA, that is contained within our genes, if you will, and the DNA codes for the production of something called RNA. RNA, messenger RNA, is like a ticker tape that then goes to a part of the cell called the ribosome, where that ticker tape goes through and gives instructions to the ribosome in terms of making a protein. So the direction of the arrow is from DNA to messenger RNA, ultimately, to the ribosome to protein that is either used in the cell or is extruded. Now, what the two current vaccines provide is the messenger RNA. They do not provide any DNA. They provide RNA that directly goes to the ribosome to make a special protein, which is the spike protein called glycoprotein S that is found on the SARS-CoV-2 virus.
Okay.
So it's making the binding protein, and when it does so, these proteins escape the cell and are seen by our immune system that says, whoa, there's an abnormal protein there. Let's make memory cells so we know how to get rid of it, and let's make antibodies. So immediately our bodies start to produce antibodies against that protein, not against the virus, but against part of the virus, which is the part that the virus uses to attach itself to our cells and then inject its genetic material. So we're not having anything to do with the viral genetic material at all. Only the RNA to make the protein that looks like the spike protein.
Okay. Boy,
so
that's...
There's not a DNA play with respect to these viruses. Now, so therefore, I think that, you know, the whole notion of it affecting our DNA is it's an interesting commentary, but, you know, your DNA is being affected every time you walk outside and get exposed to radiation and get in an airplane, go through security, all those things. I mean, those are dramatic effects upon our DNA day in and day out that fortunately we have DNA repair mechanisms that can deal with that.
Isn't that a wonderful thing? Thank you for disputing that. I really appreciate that. And what else can we educate the audience in regard to the safety measures of the vaccine?
The testing has been, in its scope, unprecedented in terms of the number of people that were tested. Clearly, the time course of the testing is something that we've never experienced. We've never seen a vaccine put out as quickly as these vaccines have been. We know typically it takes at least 7 to 10 years to demonstrate long-term safety of any immunization protocol. That said, this time around, that didn't happen. So could something happen in 3 years, 5 years, or a year, or a month? Don't know the answer to that. But based upon how this works, as opposed to how other vaccines work, this is not a vaccine where we're giving a killed virus or an attenuated virus. It's not giving parts of a virus per se. That said, the mechanism by which it works seems to be a lot safer, but there's no one who can absolutely say, you know, 5 years from now there won't be a problem from it. How in the world would anyone ever know? Similarly, we don't know what people are going to be like who've had COVID-19 in a year or two or three or five. People say, what are the long-term effects of COVID-19? Look, you know, America hasn't really had this experience till about a year ago now. It's then that we now believe that this SARS-CoV-2 virus had made its way to America and began infecting people. So we do not have the answer to that. We know that there are about 17% to 20% of individuals who have been infected who are experiencing so-called long-haul COVID, where they have cognitive issues, psychiatric issues, generalized fatigue, shortness of breath, muscle pain, etc., and are still afflicted by those symptoms and others. And we just can't tell these individuals how long it will take till they get better, because there's no track record here. You know, we normally say, well, in my vast experience, I can tell you typically it takes so long. We don't know that. We don't know if people are going to be this way who, you know, maybe lost their sense of smell, for example. We don't know if that's going to be a problem for the rest of their lives. And that's a scary proposition, that all of these issues people may have may be with them for the rest of their lives. The reason it's important is because there is an attitude out there saying, you know, the death rate from COVID-19 is somewhere less than 1%. And that's true, and I abide by that. But, you know, and therefore, because it's such a low, I have a 99% chance of getting COVID-19 and surviving. Great, I believe you. The point is, though, that if 20% of people, if 10% of people get COVID and have long-term, perhaps lifetime symptoms, that's another story that is worthy of discussion. You know,
right.
Because there are 80 million people now globally who've been affected by this. You know, 20% of 80 million is a lot of people.
Right.
Who will not, may not be the same for the rest of their lives, possibly because they didn't think it was really that important to do the things with respect to hygiene, mask wearing, washing hands, distancing from people, because they simply bought into the notion that, hey, I won't die, likely, and
right.
I agree with that. And, you know, I've had the flu a number of times, and I'll just be fine. Well, we're not seeing it this time around, so that's an important message, I believe.
I believe so, too, especially with the second strain that we are starting to see.
Well, let me just approach that if I could. So there's been a mutation in the virus that has been identified in England.
Yes.
And now it's seen in multiple countries, including the United States. And the truth of the matter is, since we received the very first gene sequencing of SARS-CoV-2 almost a year ago now, there have been more than 7,000 mutations that have taken place. So the idea that the virus is mutating is not surprising to those of us who study this kind of stuff, because it's mutating several times a day.
So the issue is
that many of these mutations are what we call retromutations, meaning it mutates to one form, and that doesn't give it any advantage, so it says, the heck with that, it goes back to the previous form. Nonetheless, that counts as a mutation or two.
Okay.
Some of the mutations have stuck. We've seen a mutant variety of this virus appear even in May in South America. Didn't seem like the mutation conferred any difference in terms of its virulence or in terms of the severity of the disease. But this time around, it looks like there's about a 53% increase in its virulence, meaning how contagious it is. It is still nowhere near as contagious as other things we have experienced in the past, like measles and chickenpox, etc. But we know generally the time course of measles and chickenpox. Generally, people, number one, become immune almost permanently. And number two, it's what we call a monophasic event, that by and large, you get your chickenpox and you're done with it, and you go on your merry way once your skin heals. You know, can there be complications? Of course. But as mentioned earlier, that's not what we're seeing this time around with SARS-CoV-2, that, you know, in about a fifth of people, there are consequences that may not go away.
And also in the parts of contracting coronavirus and healing from it or overcoming it, those individuals are also able to receive the vaccine as well. I mean, just because you've had the coronavirus doesn't prevent you from receiving the vaccine. Is that correct?
That's right. And as a matter of fact, people who've had COVID are encouraged to get immunization. The big unknown, unfortunately, is there's no way of knowing, because we haven't had the immunizations around that long, how long it's going to last. So we do know that even having full-blown COVID-19 may not confer significant length of time for immunity. You know, there are studies appearing in journals like The Lancet from South Korea of individuals getting it a second time after they test negative, meaning that their immune system didn't learn. Neither their memory cells or their antibody responses were not able to protect these individuals the next time around. Having said that, these are individuals who ostensibly did produce antibodies spike protein, which is exactly the way these vaccines work, and nonetheless, they still got it again. So no one knows the answer to that question. It would be good to know. But I think that it may be a situation that we're going to be getting vaccines, you know, year after year. Maybe they'll tweak them a little bit. And, you know, it may be that this whole issue with manufacturing and delivering and administration and record keeping is going to be part of our lives moving forward.
And do you feel like this could be similar to how flu shots have become, where every year we need to get a new flu shot because of the markers and do you feel like possibly that might be our future, where they're going to be tweaking the coronavirus as well, the vaccine itself, where there may
be... I think the big difference between this type of virus, an RNA virus, and influenza, for example, is that the technology used for the flu shots is different. What they do to manufacture and distribute flu shots is they guess what variety of flu there is going to be based upon what's called the H and the N complements. And it's going to be an H1N3 or whatever its combination is going to be. They guess and they hope they get it right. And it turns out that they often, in fact, most likely, they don't get it right. And that's the reason that the CDC published data indicates that the effectiveness of your flu shot every year is somewhere around 30-40%. That means people who are lining up at their pharmacies getting their flu shots and being so-called good patients and getting their flu shot every year, they should understand that there's about a 60% chance that that flu shot is completely ineffective for them.
Okay.
Now, it means, you know, maybe there's a 40% chance that it will help them, and they're willing, but they should know that, I think, on the front end. And that's
right.
Not unreasonable. I mean, if you have pulmonary disease or whatever, getting a 40% reduction in your risk of getting the flu, that probably makes sense. But the idea that everyone should get your flu shot today, I think is overselling it a bit, especially for people at very low risks, including, anyway, there are a lot of people who are at low risk, and I just think it's being done not necessarily for the right reasons. Now, the technology of the mRNA, this glycoprotein mRNA, or what we call nucleoside modified messenger RNA, which is technically the name of how the technology making this vaccine, the beauty of that is these manufacturers could tweak it quickly. And that said, they could respond to a change in the virus preemptively, I mean, as soon as they know, as opposed to the flu shot where you're trying to guess and hope you get it right. You know, so we can proactively, work with this immunization and tweak it, God willing. But again, there is a chance that this may be a regular part of our lives. But the good news is that you've heard this thing of herd immunity. If we can get enough people in a short period of time to reach that magic number, whether it's 70% or whatever that number is, but in a given period of time to be immune, then it's not able to – there's not enough there's not enough ladders on the rung for it to hold on. It's going to lose its ability to continue to transmit. But the problem with that is it means we're going to have to reach that number together, in fact, globally. Because let's say we reach herd immunity here in America, but let's say another country hasn't reached herd immunity. Well, we reach our herd immunity, we're good for a while, but then we get seeded again by another country once our immunity begins to wane. Which it may. It may not, but it may if the immunization doesn't confer upon us a long-term resistance or immunity to being infected.
Right. Okay, so we have to work together with all our countries. We can all do this together, right?
Yes, and it's unfortunate. There are countries on our planet, there are areas, for example, like sub-Saharan Africa, where there's not even a discussion yet of immunization.
Oh, wow.
And yet, oddly enough, even despite that, despite their lack of ICU beds, et cetera, they seem to be doing better in terms of their response. And I published a video on that last year saying it may have to do with how robust and diverse their gut bacteria are in areas of the world where they are less concerned with hygiene. So this hygiene hypothesis that the less hygiene experience a person has, the more it challenges their gut bacteria, the more diverse it is, and the more then responsive their immune systems will be. So something
wow.
to think about.
That is
Let
wild.
Let me just add the last point I want to make, and that is there's been discussion fanning the flames of conspiracy about some of the additives that are found in this vaccine that are so dangerous. And they aren't there. I mean, the active ingredient of this vaccine is this modified messenger RNA that provides these ribosomes the ability to manufacture the spike protein so that we can make an immune response against it and hopefully remember that immune response. Then this is all enclosed in a lipid envelope, if you will, a fat envelope that contains lipids that are been proven safe, used in humans many, many times before. There are five ingredients. One of them is good old cholesterol. Another one is something called polyethylene glycol, which is it's in Miralax. It's used. You know, people take this by the cupful if they need to have help with constipation. And there are a few others that are approved. Nothing to worry about. Then there are some salts to balance out the salinity and what's called the osmolarity, so it doesn't hurt. And the last ingredient is table sugar, put in there basically to help balance it out and to preserve it. There's no aluminum, there's no thimerosal or mercury. These are the published contents of what's in it. If there were thimerosal, if there were things worrisome, we would see it in the contents. So I do my due diligence on this kind of stuff. I've never had a flu shot in my life. Will I have this vaccine? Yes, I will. Will some of your listeners raise their eyebrows? So, Dr. Perlmutter's going to have flu COVID shot? Yes, I am. It's my personal choice.
Right.
And hopefully people can respect others making their personal choices based on their due diligence.
Right, and their health.
You bet.
We're in a time of change. We're in a time where we have to really be self-aware. And I think that this is a very important time to kind of dispel the fears and the chaos thinking and the conspiracy. There's so much out there. And like you said, if we can get 70% on board, we can kind of whip this baby. So
you bet, and get on with things.
Get on
that
with
said,
it, man.
But I believe we should, even in the midst of it, not put our lives on hold. Don't think we're going to be doing things once this is over. There's plenty of things to do right now. Reach out to other people, reconnect to other people, even if it's at a distance or even if it's virtual. There's a lot we can be doing. So, every day is exceedingly precious, even during these challenging times. So, I think with respect to conspiracy theories, I would say to any of your listeners who have other ideas about what this vaccination may represent, have at it. I can respect anyone's decision or position based upon what they are looking at, what they think is important, and make your own decision based upon as much data as you can get. And if people choose to believe a certain way, that is absolutely what they should do. And I want to be as respectful for others as I can be. And I just, to be sure, made my decision based upon what you and I have been talking about.
I appreciate that so much, David. And thank you so much for your research, your information, and your vulnerability in, letting us in on the fact that you're getting this done, because you've actually put my fears to rest. Not that I was tapped into conspiracy theory, but I'm open. So I want to move on in my life and not be sequestered as much. So thank you. You have definitely
all right. A pleasure,
my,
and thanks for chatting
mind.
With me today. Okay.
Thank
bye-bye.
You so much, David. Bye bye. Thank you. And thank you, audience, for tuning in to Unlimited Realities. I appreciate you for tuning in every week. I hope to bring you some inspiring information, just like we just heard from Dr. David Perlmutter. Thank you. Have a blessed week. Till next week. Bye-bye.